Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, talknation.org for news and discussion about politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
Almost 1,000 combat missions flown in Iraq just for the month of November, and they're talking about a drastic increase in that number as they would engage in a troop drawdown.
An increase in the air war in Iraq, even as discussions about a troop withdrawal are going on in America. Will the Bush administration bomb its way out of Iraq? And what will be the cost to the Iraqi people? What could a major bombing campaign in Iraq do to further inflame an already divided Middle East? Journalist Dar Jamail joins us today to talk about what is happening to the Iraqi people as 500 and 1,000-pound bombs land on their cities and towns. He was in Iraq through 8 months of war and occupation, and unlike many other reporters, he focused his attention on talking with Iraqis, reporting what they were telling him about Abu Ghraib prison, the occupation, house arrests, and their long suffering. You can read his latest work at Interpress Service, The Asia Times, and other publications, or find them online at darjamailiraq.com. During his speaking tour of the U.S. after returning home from testifying at the World Tribunal on Iraq, Dar Jamail said many times that the solution to the ongoing crisis in Iraq is to bring U.S. forces home. I asked him to talk about the new level of criticism aimed at the Bush administration and recent calls to bring the troops home.
It's apparent that as long as the failed occupation of Iraq continues to grind forward, that the Bush administration will become more and more desperate in what type of propaganda they're using to justify it, as well as blaming the people who are dissenting against what's happening here. And I think this is what we're just going to continue to see and should get used to seeing as this goes on, because it's a totally failed situation, and as the number of U.S. soldiers dying in Iraq and being wounded in Iraq continues to increase, we're going to see more and more of this propaganda, like what Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld even today came out and warned against a fundamentalist super state being generated in Iraq if the U.S. withdraws. Just more of this type of baseless fear-mongering being used by the Secretary of Defense and Mr. Bush and Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice. And it's really not a surprise when we look at how unpopular the situation in Iraq has become. And right now, it's all polls even indicate the fact that the majority of Americans are now against what's happening in Iraq.
Let's turn to your December 1st story, "Where People Cannot Afford Their Country" is your title. I want to talk about that because that is not being discussed. In spite of the new level of criticism aimed toward the Bush White House, there is not a lot of discussion about the suffering and endurance of the Iraqi people and what they have had to go through because of the lies that we're now finally noticing the Bush administration told.
It is a horrific situation, one that's really not being reported much, if any at all, in the corporate media, and that's regarding how are people in Iraq getting by, particularly if we look at the economy there with over 70% unemployment. The infrastructure is in complete shambles, and almost no reconstruction has occurred. And so what this looks like on the ground is, even in the capital city of Baghdad, that people are essentially camping in their houses where they have, on average, 3 hours of electricity per day now. Sometimes they have running water, sometimes not. But when they do have that running water, they better boil it, otherwise they're going to get very, very sick. And then, of course, the security situation, which is very detrimental to everything going on. It's a horrific living situation there, and one that's very hard for us back here in the United States to imagine, where we have great security. If we have a power outage, it's a really, really big deal. So it's very hard to imagine living in such an unstable, insecure, totally demolished infrastructure, which the situation is in Iraq right now.
Dar, you have said in the past that there were problems within the ministries in Iraq that were set up during the time of Bremer's coalition, and you have said that they were largely controlled by the U.S. Then we saw a series of stories about corruption in these offices, and some of the ministers, in fact, left the country of Iraq trying to escape prosecution. Now, in your story, you're talking about the Ministry of Trade And you're looking at the amount of supplies that Iraqis are able to get. Talk about the food shortages.
We just talked about how bad the economy is and the extreme unemployment and how difficult it is to move around because of the security situation. So what this has caused is a situation where Iraqis have become increasingly dependent on the monthly food ration. This is the food program that was set up during the sanctions under the Oil for Food program and has continued to this day. And what this is the head of every household in Iraq gets a food coupon, which once a month they take to a food distribution outlet and they get essentially what is a roughly called a food basket. They get basic staples to survive on for that month. They get rice, beans, sugar, tea, laundry detergent, baby milk powder, just these very basic elements that enough for people to, in a very slim way, I should add, but enough for people to survive on for a month. And the problem which has arisen lately is, A, the main problem is these aren't being distributed in a timely fashion. So there's parts of Iraq now that haven't received a food ration in several months' time. So this is a very dire circumstance, especially when we look at it through a recent report which found that it estimated 25% of Iraqis would literally starve to death if they did not receive this monthly food ration on a regular basis. And another big problem with it is under the Coalition Provisional Authority, which was the first U.S.-imposed government in Iraq when the occupation began, small items from this monthly food basket began to be replaced with money, so people could then theoretically go buy these missing items on the open market, like the baby milk, for example. But the problem was this created a much greater demand for that item on the market, which of course raised the price. So the money given to the people means they don't have that item in their food basket, plus the money they have to buy it is simply not enough. So this has essentially sped up the problem rather than provided any sort of a solution. And as a result, many Iraqis now are literally starving to death.
I think to see Iraq is to really understand that, you know, what the people there have been going through. And certainly the videos available on your website tell the story. Why don't you talk about the three videos that are available at darjamailiraq.com?
The three videos I have on my site, I have them there because they really show very, very clearly small glimpses of what's happening on the ground in Iraq. And one video is called Caught in the Crossfire. It's made by an American independent filmmaker, and it's about the second siege of Fallujah. And I really do strongly suggest that folks watch this video because it's some of the only footage to have come out of Fallujah during and since the second siege of that city. Then there's another one regarding the first siege of Fallujah made by a Japanese filmmaker called Fallujah, April 2004. And it's a very, very solid documentary. No music, not too much editing, just on-the-ground footage of an individual who went into Fallujah just after the April siege and documented by interviewing witnesses, eyewitnesses, and doctors about what happened on the ground there as well as has some very, very powerful footage and gives a very good overview of what happened in Fallujah to generate the resistance there and all the events that led up to the first siege and therefore the second siege of that city. And then there's another one made by a British filmmaker called A Letter to the Prime Minister, and it focuses on the events leading up to the invasion itself, as well as having some very powerful footage from inside Baghdad during the invasion, as well as footage from inside Fallujah in April, which is when I was in that city. And I was actually with this filmmaker inside the city, and people can watch firsthand there scenes from a small clinic inside Fallujah during the U.S. assault in April of 2004.
Representative Murtha, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, has really come on strong as to the need to pull U.S. troops out. Now, as we look at what Representative Murtha is calling for, however, he's talking about leaving a U.S. presence there intact so that, he said, if there were terrorist cells in Iraq, they could be targeted from the air. And he talked about putting U.S. soldiers in countries near Iraq to protect the region. Just comment on that before we get into a discussion that I know you have been looking at recently about, in fact, an air war in Iraq.
the idea of simply a great reduction in the troop level there, along with keeping people in that region ready to do a sort of a quick reaction force and continue on in a military operation if necessary, seems a bit of a half measures to me, and that's certainly not bringing the troops home. It's certainly not going to generate more stability in the region, which is the whole goal of engaging in a reduction of U.S. troops there. But more importantly, that would be simply another move towards using U.S. air power in Iraq, which is happening right now at a startling rate. I'm working on a piece right now to try to cover this because it hasn't been covered by most mainstream media sources at all as far as how heavy and how intense of an air campaign the U.S. military is involved in Iraq. And if we look at the number of air missions flown in Iraq only for the month of November, we have 996 total combat missions flown from the air in Iraq, and that does not include weekends. For whatever reason, the U.S. military, the U.S. Air Force does not make statistics available for the weekends that they fly missions in Iraq. So excluding weekends, which means we would easily see over 1,000, but that's almost 1,000 combat missions flown in Iraq just for the month of November, and they're talking about a drastic increase in that number as they would engage in a troop drawdown. And when we look at what these missions are doing, we have to also take into account that many, many of these missions are being flown to drop bombs inside cities. We're talking 500 and 1,000-pound bombs, on occasion a 2,000-pound bomb, which would literally destroy an entire large two-story house. And these are the types of munitions being dropped inside the cities, generating massive civilian casualties. So talking about a troop reduction while escalating the air war is very similar to the strategy used in Vietnam when they withdrew troops but engaged in a very big increase in the air war there. And we saw what resulted in that policy, that the air war did not compensate for the fact that that war was still lost. And I am certain that we would have the same situation in Iraq.
Now, you've written about Operation Steel Curtain. I'm looking at your story, November 7th, 2005. In this piece, you talk about what is indeed happening on the ground and how doctors were clamoring for assistance with a humanitarian crisis. You talk about the warplanes coming and destroying houses, killing and injuring dozens of people. Do you think that enough attention has been paid to the problem that the U.S. military and the White House have tended to justify their actions in Iraq by always claiming to be attacking and targeting terrorist cells, just as Representative Murtha referred to? And this strikes me as a dangerous train of thought that has gotten the Iraqi people killed.
It's another good point, because I think it brings us back to the problem with the media, which if we consider the fact that the last statistic I saw on this showed that 80% of people in the United States still rely primarily on the main television outlets to get their news. So if we watch, if people watch those outlets, they are going to believe, because that's what the news is being reported as, that, of course, the targets being hit in Iraq are only insurgents, are only terrorists, this sort of thing, that the majority of the people fighting against the U.S. military in Iraq are terrorists coming out from outside the country, despite the fact that even the military admits that maximum 6% of the people that they're fighting in Iraq are not Iraqis and are coming from outside the country. So the problem is that people are being led to believe this, and the reality is that, as in any war throughout history, again, the vast majority of the people dying in Iraq are civilians. They're not fighters, and they're not even U.S. soldiers, but they're civilians who are beside a house that is hit with a bomb, and oftentimes inside of a house that is hit by a bomb because of bad targeting or bad information being provided to the U.S. military. And this is simply not being reported, and this is a very huge problem, because we've got a situation in Iraq that is looking more and more like Vietnam on a daily basis. And yet the big difference here is we do not have the footage coming out, we do not have the reporting coming out showing how horrible the situation this is on the ground for Iraqi civilians and for U.S. soldiers. And it's because the corporate media is simply not doing its job, not interested in that type of reporting, and is not doing it now and will not do it.
Dar, let's talk a little bit about Fallujah, because even as we record this, we are looking at coverage of the Saddam Hussein trial. Just talk about Fallujah in the context of that trial.
Well, Fallujah is really, it's an ongoing huge failure of the U.S. military and the Bush administration in Iraq, because Fallujah is covered up by things like this trial of Saddam Hussein, which is a farce, which by most international organizations and law firms is not seen as legitimate, because it's not an impartial court, it's not an impartial judge, it's not being held in a neutral location, and it is a bit of a big show trial. And even Iraqis on the ground are concerned and expressing dismay at this point by how much of a farce it is that Saddam can go in there and raise the ruckus that he has been raising and get away with it, essentially, and making these unreasonable demands. And so it's, in my opinion, it's a big charade, it's a big propaganda distraction from the fact of something like Fallujah, where, of course, people here watching the mainstream news are going to think, well, Fallujah's been pacified, things are better there. And the reality is we had 10 more Marines killed there just a few days ago, right on the outskirts of Fallujah. 2 days before that, two more Marines inside Fallujah were killed. We've got U.S. warplanes dropping bombs in Fallujah on a weekly basis. The situation is anything but resolved. But again, instead of getting reportage about that, we're being shown things like this sort of this mock trial, if you will, about deposed dictator Saddam Hussein.
I'd like to know just your thoughts about the comparison between the collective punishment that Saddam Hussein's on trial for enacting in Dujail and the collective punishment that was exercised in Fallujah, where you got into the city in April of 2004 to see a devastating consequence of the U.S. attacks there.
This is an important point, a very important point, because the collective punishment that Saddam Hussein is now being tried for pales in comparison to the types of collective punishment the U.S. military is meting out in Iraq on almost a daily basis. And again, Fallujah is the primary example, because we've had thousands and thousands of people, innocent people there, killed as a result of the U.S. siege of that city in order to root out, if you will, excuse me the expression there, but to use the Bush administration term, to root out the people opposing the occupation from that city. So for a few hundred, at most about 1,000 fighters in that city, the U.S. has essentially destroyed the entire city and killed several thousand innocent civilians. We've got similar tactics going on now in Ramadi and other places like around Bakuva and up near Al-Qaim on the Syrian border, where entire cities and villages are being collectively punished on a regular basis, meaning they're sealed off, no medical supplies, no food are being allowed in to the city, water and electricity are cut off, and again, it's civilians paying the highest price. And this has become the standard operating procedure of the U.S. military in Iraq, this collective punishment. So if Saddam Hussein is going to be tried for this, if there is justice, of course, the leaders of and commanders of the U.S. military, going on up, of course, to the commander-in-chief, Mr. Bush, should be tried for these sort of crimes as well.
As we watch the Iraqis put in charge of more and more security, we've seen what people are calling, as a matter of fact now, death squads, and operating for the Shiites in control in the government. We've seen recently that Ayad Alawi, the former prime minister of Iraq, was actually chased out of a mosque in Najaf, and this was a kind of a hair-raising scene, Alawi having just commented on some of what's going on in Iraq being similar to what was going on in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, very ironically. Comment on this and what you expect might happen in Iraq as U.S. troops did pull out.
The situation with Iyad Alawi, he is vying very heavily for political power coming out of the election to take place there now in just a little over a week's time. And he is essentially the Bush administration and Blair administration's most hopeful front runner to get power, because he is the most friendly candidate to those administrations. However, if we look at how well esteemed he is on the ground with Iraqis, as you just mentioned. He was chased out of Najaf recently by a crowd throwing shoes, which is highly the greatest insult you can do to a person in Arab culture, is to hit them or touch them with the bottom of your shoe. So shoes were thrown at him, rotten tomatoes. He was literally chased out of Najaf. And then today, his office in Najaf was blown up by a bomb. So people in Iraq do not like him. They feel very betrayed by him. They're well aware of the fact that he's an ex-CIA man and in the back pocket of the Bush administration. So his chances in this upcoming election are very, very dim at best. And then really regarding the situation of what would occur in Iraq if the U.S. Were to pull out, essentially most Iraqis on the ground feel that this is only the first step in generating more stability and increasing security and decreasing the amount of fighting going on in the country is a full and immediate withdrawal of U.S. forces. And I think we need to stay focused on the Iraqis' opinion on this, not my opinion, not other journalists. While people do ask for that, I think the most important thing to note is the most recent poll to come out indicating that the vast majority of Iraqis want an immediate U.S. withdrawal was one commissioned even by the British military. And this poll, the results were announced on October 24th, found that 82% of Iraqis surveyed wanted a full immediate withdrawal of all occupation forces immediately.
Dar, that leads us very naturally to the Mideast Wire, and that's on your website, MideastWire.com. You are providing translations, a daily Iraq monitor. Just talk about that and put that in some context. You know, I'm looking at a December 5th Wire story, and it says here that Iraqi authorities are scheduled to take over responsibility of the three major prisons in Iraq, namely Baghdad International, Abu Ghraib, and the Bukha detention camp in Basra. And that's by the end of next month. So we're looking at January.
Middle East Wire, I really would encourage people to check this source out. You can read just the Iraqi daily news briefs that are translated from Arabic into English on my website. What Mideast Wire is, are a group of about 20 editors over in the Middle East that take pertinent news stories from Iraq and all the other Middle Eastern countries, for that matter, and translate them into English on a daily basis. So it's a very valuable news source to be able to get information on what's happening in that region and in Iraq straight from those Arab news sources. It's the type of information that's simply not being reported back here. So I definitely would encourage people to avail themselves of that information. And the story you mentioned is a case in point. This is something that it's a big question mark if it will be reported back here. Whether or not it will is a big question, as well as when it might be reported. But the fact is that, as you mentioned, just reported today that Iraqi forces are slated to take over control of the three main prisons in Iraq, which are now being controlled by the U.S. military. So this story is very significant, especially when we look at the fact of how much Iraqi security forces have come under scrutiny and being accused of torture even worse than that which was being conducted by the Americans. And now these people are going to take over control of the three main prisons. It's very disconcerting for Iraqis and does not bode well for the future.
Let's talk finally about the CPT, Christian Peacemaker Team, the four members of this group that have been kidnapped in Baghdad. I know that you have written about them. Just talk about your piece.
Christian Peacemaker Team is a group of people that they're based out of Canada, but they have offices in the United States, and they have people who volunteer for them from all over the world, and they're active in over 100 different countries around the globe. And their primary mission is to simply go in, put their bodies in between people who are fighting to try to stop it. They've done things in Iraq, like gone in to document what's happened in Abu Ghraib long before it was ever reported in the U.S. mainstream media. They've documented what's been going on in Fallujah. They've documented what's happened to the families of detainees and tried to do what they can to bring them aid and comfort. So they do, in my opinion, absolutely top-notch, stellar work. They're great people. They have a great mission, and they've been in Iraq since the very beginning of the occupation. So even before the invasion itself, actually. So the fact that these individuals have been detained is very, very disconcerting, and it's still, as of today, remains unclear who is responsible for this. This is a resistance group that we've never heard of before. They could be legitimate, but maybe not. There's a lot of speculation on the ground in Iraq that the people responsible, it could be a covert operation, because if we look at the intentional targeting of reporters in Iraq, the fact that these members of Christian Peacemaker Team are the last Western ongoing presence in Iraq who are monitoring the transgressions of the U.S. military there, it certainly leaves it open for a lot of speculation. And, of course, that sounds a bit like a conspiracy theorist back here, but on the ground in Iraq, this is how this is being perceived by many, many people.
Well, we could talk, too, about Sagrena, the woman from Italy, who was also kidnapped and shot, as was the Italian intelligence officer who died when with her. And, of course, they were already free and shot by the U.S. military. So a lot of questions were raised about that, and I believe there is a lawsuit right now about that, with Sagrena herself looking for information. So it's not strictly a matter of a conspiracy theory. I mean, there is a certain amount of information available now to suggest that, just as you've said, that journalists are targeted, there is reason to believe that the people being taken and harassed and targeted in Iraq are chosen for a very specific reason, and it's not always by the people who we would at first blush imagine.
Yes, it absolutely. And that's another thing that's difficult to convey to people back here in the U.S. is how how dark and how complex and how ugly the situation is on the ground in Iraq, where we've got the U.S. military that is losing the situation. They have essentially lost control of it, which is why they are resorting to more air power. And so they're willing to do whatever is necessary on the ground to get information and to try to get a leg up on the resistance, which has really been dominating them for quite some time now. So it's in that context, I think it's easier to understand that the things from the old spy novels and the things from Hollywood that come out and show really dirty tactics and dirty games being played on the ground makes it a little bit more easy to understand for folks here how complicated the situation is and how ugly, and that things like we've been discussing are very possible, and not just possible, but are happening to one degree or another on a daily basis inside Iraq.
Journalist Dar Jamail, home from Iraq and touring the U.S., Dar Jamail received an award from Project Censored at Sonoma State University, and you can read some of his stories in the 2006 book of the 25 Most Censored News Stories. That is a well-known award for progressive journalists. And as he makes his way across the U.S., Dar has received many warm welcomes from people who came to rely on his news reports about the war and occupation. Corporations in Iraq like Bechtel and Halliburton, failures at the reconstruction of Iraqi cities, and the impact of the U.S. war and occupation overall on the lives of the Iraqi people. Dar Jamail, thanks so much for joining us again on Talk Nation Radio.
All right, thanks a lot, Dori.
The website for Dar Jamail is darjamailiraq.com, DARJAMAIL iraq.com. You can also log on to that site for Middle East Newswire and translations of news from the Middle East. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. TalkNation.org for transcripts and discussion of this and other reports about politics, human rights, and the environment. Talk Nation Radio was produced in the studios of WHUS Radio. You can listen to it live Wednesdays at 5 by logging on to whus.org.